I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. This week, we're going to be schooling ourselves with the help of another journalist, Jack DeLeo, who writes for FreightWaves and Modern Shipper. So in the world of indoor positioning, RTLS, auto ID, logistics is front and center as an industry that is driving demand and is a key part of implementing systems. There's a lot to learn about it and some pretty cool stuff going on in warehouses in the last mile. Some buzzwords that we're going to be demystifying and explaining with the help of Jack. So hope you enjoy the podcast. The Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, intelligence for everyday things, powered by IoT Pixels. So, Jack, welcome to the Mr. Beacon podcast. This is part of a theme that we've had where we maybe take a step back from hardcore Bluetooth technology and the details of RTLS and actually look at what some of these tagging technologies are used for and try and understand our customer. And I think one of the best ways of doing that is talking to people whose job it is to actually cover those industries. So you write for FreightWaves and Modern Shipper. What are the personas? Who are you writing for? Tell us a bit about who you have in your mind when you're writing your pieces.
Sure. The people that FreightWaves typically reaches are, you know, people in the trucking space, supply chain operators, C-suite executives. But, I kind of center my work on the Modern Shipper brand, which is more focused on the last mile, warehousing and distribution, fulfillment, and things like that. So I think that my work sort of reaches a little bit more of a broad audience. We reach a lot of delivery drivers, gig workers, folks who work in warehouses or in retail spaces. So those are kind of the folks that we are talking to a lot. There's a lot of problems that are facing the space that I'd love to get into.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into it. What are some of those problems that are being dealt with? And I kind of see it in two halves. There's the warehouse and then there's the shipping from the warehouse. I don't know where you want to start, but either would be fine from my perspective.
Let's go ahead and start with the warehouse. So I think one of the big things that we're seeing there is just this complete lack of capacity. There's been sort of this flurry of activity where you've got these big private real estate investors buying up industrial real estate properties like warehouses, fulfillment centers, and things like that. And the market is just becoming, flooded with these companies. And so it's becoming harder and harder for smaller brands to sort of expand their warehouse network and add new facilities. But at the same time, operators are also struggling to make use of the space that they already have because you've got this rise of e-commerce orders that is pushing demand through the roof. It's making throughput higher than it's ever been before. So a lot of warehouse operators are stuck with the same amount of space, but maybe 1.5 times, 2 times as much product that they have to move through it. So finding creative ways to make use of that space is definitely one of the big ones.
And who is running the warehouses? Is it like third parties who run warehousing as a service, or how does that work?
It can depend on the actual warehouse. I believe that some facilities will have other companies come in and sort of operate things. A lot of the times it is it's people who work within that particular company that are operating.
Okay. So there's a major capacity crunch, demand's going up, supply is limited. How are these companies dealing with those pressures?
They've had to get real creative. You know, one of the things that we're seeing a lot is sort of this shift towards verticality in the warehouse. You know, you can't always build out, so sometimes you have to build up. And a lot of the space that's unused in warehouses is, you know, between the shelves and the ceiling. So you're seeing a lot more people sort of rearrange their inventory to be able to hold more in the warehouse. You're also seeing operators try to speed their inventory through the warehouse more so that less space is required to keep that. You know, you saw for a while this trend of just-in-time inventory, mm-hmm. where a brand will try to have their suppliers send them products around the time when the consumer actually wants it. There's been sort of a departure from that with the supply chain disruptions that we've seen, just because it's less reliable to be able to have a product shipped on command. So we're starting to see operators come up with different ways to speed throughput. And a lot of that is through automation and new technologies.
And so you're building up. That sounds a little challenging as stuff gets higher to the ceiling. How do you get to it? What are the technologies that people are using to solve that problem?
Yeah, how do you get to it and how do you keep track of it? Those are two really important things. So the getting to it part, you do see a fair amount of operators using robots that are kind of shuttling up and down shelves vertically to pick and return objects. You also see the use of overhead scanners and things like that more often. A lot of times operators will tag their products with an RFID tag or something like that, and they'll have an overhead scanner that allows them to get sort of a wider picture of where their inventory is spaced. So they can keep track of things that are both on the floor and in the air as well.
So in the past, maybe they just scanned things when they were putting them away or they entered into the warehouse. Now they just want a continuous view, a real-time location system. Is that right?
Right.
So how does a robot get up and down a huge stack of shelves? I'm kind of thinking of something out of Avatar or Spider-Man, you know, Dr. Oculus or whatever his name was. How does that work?
Yeah, the kind of robot I'm talking about here, it's called an ASRS, or an automated storage and retrieval system. So a lot of times that will look like robotic shuttles that will either lay between shelves and run along kind of a grid, so they can move between shelves that are tightly packed together. And then you've also got the vertical dimension of that. You know, a lot of times there'll be similarly robots that kind of attach to shelves and vertically are raised up to the product.
Yeah, I've seen these things and they're just amazing to watch. It's like a massive vending machine, but instead of potato chips, you have like a pallet of industrial parts that's being just whisked up in the air at incredible speed. We have a customer that's in the grocery space, and I thought I was looking at science fiction when I saw these massive crates and pallets full of produce just flying up in the air and dropping down, and it's really, really cool looking. And I guess, you know, this is you know, it requires an operating system. There's a lot of a technology there, and they must be pretty expensive, I'm assuming.
Yes, this is true, which is definitely one of the things that has held robots back from being adopted. But there is sort of this emerging trend that has begun to make robots a little bit more accessible. Mm-hmm. It's called robots as a service. So a robotics company, think like a Zebra Technologies, Berkshire Grey, Locus Robotics, they'll offer their AMRs or autonomous mobile robots. These are the kind of robots that will move around the warehouse floor and pick and transport inventory. They will allow warehouse operators to almost sort of subscribe to the robots. They'll sign a contract for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and they'll be able to use the service for that amount of time, and they can pull out when they need to. So there are becoming more ways for operators to start to experiment with this technology, which is, I think, important because I think it's the way that the industry is going.
Those again are just fascinating to see. Zoom around as a consultant, I remember visiting a car parts warehouse that had these things in, and they would play music in order to. So rather than just beeping at you if you walked in front of them, they would play music. I can't remember. I think it was from a major movie like Pirates of the Caribbean or something like that. But it was the same bit of music over and over again.
So, in my eyes.
Yeah, yeah. After like a week of there, you're like, I cannot stand hearing. It ruined the movie for me, unfortunately. So how do these robots know where they're going? What's happening in terms of that part of automation?
It's a great question. For a long time, operators used to use AGVs or automated guided vehicles. So these were robots that they would follow like a set path along the ground. Oftentimes it would take the form of an actual line and cameras and sensors would simply sort of follow that. Now, today, the technology has become a lot more complex and a lot more intelligent. You see a lot of artificial intelligence and machine learning being used with these robotics. Machine learning in particular, I think, is very interesting because, there are companies that they're able to sort of collect data from robots that they've already deployed. And because of the machine learning aspect, the robots are sort of connected with this kind of hive mind. So they're able to teach new robots based on what the older robots have already learned. So each new iteration becomes more intelligent. You're seeing really, really fascinating things like that happen a lot.
Isn't it amazing how these science fiction concepts that maybe we saw in Star Trek, the Borg something like that, and the ideas get recycled and actually used for something that's actually very practical. That's really cool. So what else are you seeing? You wrote an article recently about voice interaction. I was trying to get my head around why people would use voice in a warehouse.
Yeah, I think it's really not even necessarily about voice, but about being more mobile, being more hands-free. So you've got things like voice technology where a worker will have a headset on and, rather than manually recording all of the things that they picked, they can just talk into the headset and they can also receive commands from the headset telling them what to pick and where it is. But then you've also got things like handheld mobile devices. A lot of times you'll see workers have these and they'll be connected into a WMS so that you can view your workflow from wherever you are in the warehouse. So you've got devices that they can connect to your wrists, on your finger, over your head. You've even got devices that can be integrated into like a forklift. There are kind of mobile tablets, if you will, that can be mounted on forklifts for workers to be able to access their workflows while they're on the move in that way as well. So it's a lot about minimizing the amount of downtime that that these workers are experiencing.
And something vaguely sinister about it, the machines absorbing the human being rather than the other way around. But you used an acronym there, which we should explore. WMS, what does that stand for? What does it mean?
Yes, I should have explained that first. It's a warehouse management system. This is basically the way that operators will keep track of their inventory as it's going through the warehouse, as well as the way a lot of the time that they plan out their tasks and assign tasks to different workers. It's sort of like your base of operations, if you will.
And who are the players in the WMS space? Who makes them?
Off the top of my head, let's see. Manhattan is a company that makes a really popular one. You've also got companies like Tompkins is one of them that has a WMS. There's just a bunch of them, really. The space is it's pretty saturated, actually.
Interesting. And as you look at leaders in that space, you've talked about a lot of technology, and I don't know exactly how far it is in the adoption cycle, but who are some of the brands that you see as being, leaders in this space? Are there names that you see popping up when, the latest Israeli WMS startup starts quoting who they're piloting with? Who are the thought leaders in this space from your perspective?
Sure. So from a tech standpoint, I think a company like Zebra has made a name for itself in the space. They make AMRs, autonomous mobile robots, and a bunch of other different kinds of warehouse tech that's been seeing more adoption recently. Berkshire Grey, which I believe I also mentioned earlier, is another big player. You also see companies that haven't traditionally been in the space starting to move into it. Honeywell is a company that comes to mind for me. That's kind of the company that inspired me to write that Voice article. They're doing a lot of really innovative things in the warehouse space, which was surprising to me at first, because in my mind I pictured them as an aerospace and defense company. But you're really seeing the warehousing space become kind of attractive to companies in all sorts of industries.
So Jack, thanks for that. That was really helpful for me. Let's talk about getting things into the warehouse and out of the warehouse to the customer. Can you, I have to admit to being somewhat confused by all of the acronyms that are used, 3PL and all that sort of thing. Can you untangle some of that? And how does stuff get in the warehouse and how does it leave? And what are the different approaches to organizing those logistics?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very complex process with a lot of different players involved. You mentioned 3PLs. That's one of them. Third-party logistics provider is what that stands for. So a lot of times a company will enlist a 3PL to help them move goods from one place to the other. So a lot of times the methods that a 3PL will use, you've got ground-based methods via truck, via van. Those are very popular, as well as rail and air. But one of the things that we're seeing a lot of is sort of this emphasis on a hub and spoke model, where you'll have sort of these distribution centers spread out around the country. Those are your hubs. And then from there, the spokes are sort of the individual stores or the individual customers themselves. So rather than having, one kind of major facility in, say, Seattle, a company will have facilities in Seattle and Phoenix and New York, and each of those facilities will serve its own market. So there's sort of this emphasis on positioning the inventory as close to the consumer as possible, so that you don't have to move the goods as far.
That's really interesting. As a computer scientist, it makes me think about caching mechanisms that are used in computers, and it seems like you were talking about warehouse management systems. I think about an operating system. And
hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's very interesting how these ideas get transplanted. So 3PL, third-party logistics, what does that really mean? And what are the alternatives? Is there a 4PL, a 2PL? Or
help us. There's no 4PL, unfortunately. But the alternative would really be just for a company to kind of handle those things itself. A lot of times that's not really an option for a company, especially a company that's young or that's trying to grow. But for some of the more established players, for example, you've got Amazon. They're not going to use a 3PL. They've got their entire nationwide fulfillment network. They've got Fulfillment by Amazon, which lets other retailers use their fulfillment network. So they're almost in a way functioning as a 3PL themselves. So I think it really depends on sort of the stage that you're at in the business.
And so it seems like Amazon are the leader, the thought leader, the implementation leader in this space. They've taken something that was a nightmare for most companies and turned it into a core competence and an advantage. What are some of the cool things that you see Amazon doing in this area?
Yeah, Amazon, they actually, just this week, they announced a new initiative. It's called Buy with Prime. And this essentially is allowing retailers to offer products on their e-commerce websites and be able to offer their customers Prime benefits, meaning free delivery, next day delivery, and free returns and things like that. So whereas Fulfillment by Amazon was kind of a way for companies to just store their inventory with Amazon, not necessarily get the benefits of Prime, now you have a way for these customer or these companies to make themselves more attractive to customers that use Amazon. They'll be able to include a little Prime widget on their websites that tells people which products are eligible. And so I think that's kind of a big deal. Amazon is really sort of relinquishing a little bit of the control that it likes to have over its consumers. They've done a ton of interesting things in the logistics space over the years. I think really just the sheer size of their network is astounding to me. They've got hundreds of facilities across the country, and some of those are 1 million square feet, 2 million square feet. They're massive. And it's just, it's really incredible. And at the same time, though, you've got these massive facilities, but you've also got these smaller stores that Amazon is beginning to open. They're traditionally just an online retailer, but they've actually opened brick and mortar stores to kind of try to position their inventory, as I was talking about before, closer to their customers. So providing them a physical place that they can go to access items.
And full disclosure, I should say that Williot, my day job and the sponsor of this podcast, is Amazon's an investor in our company. But that hasn't influenced all of the admiring superlatives I've used here. Okay, that's great. So, COVID has trained us to stay away from the shops, order online. And so last mile delivery is becoming a lot more important. What are the trends that you see in last mile, Jack?
Yeah, I think one thing that you're seeing a lot of is consolidation. And I don't mean in the sense of companies merging or things like that. I mean more in the sense of consolidating orders together to reduce the number of trips that a last mile delivery driver has to make. Because, one of the big problems facing the last mile right now is sustainability. Just the sheer volume of products that are being shipped. You've got e-commerce as well, which is playing into that. It's creating many, many more miles traveled over the last mile. So companies are trying to look at ways to reduce those miles. You've got things like split cart, for example. This is the idea that you can bundle orders from different retailers and have them arrive at the same time at the same place. So that kind of eliminates the need for multiple trips. You're also seeing retailers do things like looking at the last mile as the first mile of returns, meaning that as these companies make deliveries, they'll also go out and pick up products that are out for returns, reducing the number of trips in that way as well.
That's really cool. Because that's kind of one of the disadvantages that would stop you placing an order online is the whole returns process and so forth. So anything else in sustainability that you see? I do worry about that as a bit of a tree hugger myself. Feel a little bit guilty as I order things online, and I feel like I'm just creating more of more trips, more CO2 emissions from all these vehicles, more packaging. To what degree do you see that as a problem? And has anyone got any answers to that?
Yeah, it's a big problem. The transportation industry, I'm not sure the exact number, but it's responsible for a huge portion of U.S. emissions. So it is a big problem. And you've also got the problem of, wasted products or products ending up in landfills, things like that. So I do think, continuing with the topic of returns, that retailers are trying to make it easier for customers to return items and then also easier for them to repurpose those items and resell them instead of having them end up in landfills. So they're doing that in a few different ways. One of them is offering to go to the customer to actually make the return, rather than having them go into the store and drop off the product. So you're seeing more of an emphasis on making that process as easy as possible for the customer. You're even seeing some retailers allowing customers to leave objects curbside. So they're really making that process a lot easier. And then once those products are back in inventory, you also see a lot of retailers kind of dedicate an entire system to returns. It's called an RMS, or Returns Management System, similar to a WMS, but specifically for products that have been sent back to the retailer. So there's a big push to repurpose those items and get them resold rather than have them end up in landfills, which for a long time has kind of been the case with returns. The majority of them have ended up in landfills up until recently.
That's a really cool thing. I wasn't aware of that. And it sort of fits into this move towards circularity. Maybe they'll extend the definition of returns and start selling better quality products that people can actually give back when they've finished with them. You see a lot of systems around buy nothing and so forth, where people are sharing stuff. So it seems like there's an opportunity for brands to start to participate in that, especially as they have the logistics capability that can move these things around and help people get value from what they're doing.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up that idea of circularity it's not just products that are being returned. It's also the packaging. You see a lot of companies started taking on this reusable packaging, where the customer can receive the item and then return the packaging back to the retailer. There are two companies that come to mind that I've seen do this, Lush and Zara. They're both, one is an apparel retailer, the other sells fragrances and bath and body items. But those companies will offer reusable packaging. They'll sell it to the customer, and then the customer has the option to bring that back to the store to be used to package another product. So you're seeing things like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've been experimenting with these ready-made meal or buying the ingredients, and I love it, apart from the fact that we just get this mass of packaging that you have to throw away. And it's basically a reason why we're not using those services more. As a company, Williots, that's basically our primary focus now is reusable transport items. And I think it's not just about being virtuous, but supply chains are really tight. And so getting hold of the materials to make disposable packaging is becoming increasingly difficult and increasingly expensive. So it just makes economic sense to recycle that, so you don't suddenly find, oh, I can't ship things because I don't have the materials. If you can, now we have technology, we can manage these pools of reusable transport items so much better. It's actually one of the things that makes me optimistic as I go into work in the morning. So I hope you found that discussion with Jack useful and educational. As part of our warm-up process, we talked to our guests a bit about how they got their job, what they do, and their taste in music. So take a listen to how Jack got to where he is and a little bit about the music that inspires him. So, Jack, you seem to have a very interesting job. You're covering all these trends that are central to the way business is done now with logistics and warehousing and so forth. How did you get to do the job that you do? And what is the job that you do?
Sure. It's a great question. So I write for FreightWaves, which is a publication focusing on the supply chain, logistics, freight, and pretty much everything in that realm. Within FreightWaves, I also write for Modern Shipper, which is sort of covering the endpoints of the supply chain. So last mile delivery, warehousing and distribution, things like that. I came here actually right after I graduated college about a year ago. About a month after that, I was at FreightWaves. Coming in here, I didn't really know much at all about the supply chain industry, but it's been a really great experience so far. I've learned a lot. And I think that my perspective as kind of an outsider has almost helped me a little bit, because I'm able to sort of pick up on the things that are interesting to people who aren't familiar with the industry. It's been a journey, but yeah, I'm loving it so far.
How did you get your first taste of journalism? It was before you graduated, right?
So I actually went to school for journalism. I went to Northwestern University. It's outside Chicago. So I studied for 4 years there. And it's kind of funny because, most of the people who work for FreightWaves, they're coming from within the supply chain industry or from within the logistics industry. So my background is actually in writing. So that's kind of how I ended up here.
Excellent. Very good. Well, as you know, we have this musical tradition on the show, asking our guests about three songs that mean something to them. What's your first choice?
Yeah, very excited for this segment. First choice, I've got Doctor My Eyes by Jackson Browne. A bit of an older song, but growing up, my parents used to play that whole album on repeat pretty much any time I got in the car and went anywhere. So that song is really kind of ingrained into my memory, and it's always going to have a special place in my heart.
That's awesome. And not what I was expecting from someone of your era. Well done. Surprise. Definitely extra points for surprising us. What's number two?
All right. Second one I've got, it's called Under the Milky Way by The Church. Maybe not as familiar of a choice, but it's the song that plays during my favorite scene of my favorite movie. It's called Donnie Darko. So that song has always kind of just stuck with me as sort of the audio representation of that moment.
And what do you like about that movie? It's pretty unconventional, isn't it?
So you know it. It is a very unconventional movie. I just like that the way the story is told. It's just very interesting. It's unconventional. It makes you think a lot, and it's very whimsical. I'm just a big fan of that.
All right. Hopefully people will check it out. It's definitely worth a view. And number three.
Yes, number three. I've got Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. It's really just a beautiful song. That album is one of the very first albums I got on vinyl. I have a small collection that I started. It's a little bit cliche maybe, but the two lost souls swimming in a fishbowl line, it gets me every time. I just love that song.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've been listening to a podcast called Rock on Tours, which has a couple of the bassist and a guitarist who are now playing in one of the instantiations of what's left of Pink Floyd. So I've found myself going back listening to their stuff as well. It still holds up. Very good. Well, Jack, thanks a lot for that. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to share.
Very good. Well, Jack, I really appreciate your time. You've certainly taught me a lot. So thanks for schooling us. And I hope we get an opportunity to do this again in the future. And you can keep us up to date on what's happening in warehousing, logistics, and last mile. And we've heard a lot from you. And so I hope people will continue to follow you. And you have a podcast as well, right?
I don't. I should make one though. I am looking at starting a new video series though from Modern Shipper. So keep an eye out for that.
Okay, fantastic. Well, appreciate the preview of that, and we'll look out for it and continue reading what you write on Modern Shipper and FreightWave. So thanks again, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that wraps up another week's podcast. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Jack, and some of those ideas inspired you and helped you a bit in terms of getting your head around how these industries operate. We really appreciate your following us, staying to the end. And as you're obviously a committed listener, please do rate us, rank us, and share what we do with your friends and colleagues. So until next time, stay safe and be happy. All the best.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.